Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
You're welcome to Friday Night Racing. It's Johnny Ward sitting in for Ger Gilroy on a huge weekend for racing. We are going to celebrate the victory of Freewheeling Dillon in the Irish National. We're obviously going to talk about the Grand National Aintree tomorrow, a massive, massive weekend for racing. And we have a very special guest on the show today, Darren McLaughlin, who we'll get to in a couple of minutes. A massive result for racing, 150-1 shot winning for a local trainer. Ricky Doyle, obviously in the saddle, a jockey not accustomed to big race success. And of course, a lot of people around the country were Bob Dylan fans back in the horse at 150-1. It's Friday Night Racing and Off the Ball, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. Follow the new Twitter account at HRI Racing, hashtag every racing moment. We'll also be joined by Tom Malone throughout the course of the show. But let's get straight over to Dermot McLaughlin, who's probably still somewhere on cloud nine, I'd imagine, Dermot.
Hi, Johnny. Yeah, good form, thank you.
What has the last 4 days been like?
Very hectic. Johnny, the yard's been busy there. Neighbours calling, plenty of phone calls, plenty of people wanting to see the horse. I'll go.
Just describing the race there, and I suppose like racing maybe had a massive lift, I think, throughout Cheltenham with what the Irish achieved, but mainly I suppose Rachel Blackmore and some of the performances we had. But I thought this was nearly a perfect result for racing. You'd 150-1 shot winning that would have been backed by some of the, I suppose, the quintessential housewives and the once a year punters around the country, but also what it would mean to somebody like you, and also to Ricky Doyle to win the Irish National.
Johnny, look, sure, I've been going there from a young age. My father rode the winner, I think my uncle was second in it. We've been going there from a young age, so as I said, it's only 3 miles up the road from us, so it's a race I always wanted to have a runners in, alone a winner. So we're only training about 10 years now, so I was lucky enough to find this horse, and I aimed him at it last year, and I said, look, if we can keep a clear run, and everything went well, his preparation went well, and also was great.
It was probably not little announced, I suppose, or mentioned that you did produce a horse who kind of, you know, he was off a little break as well. You produced him on the day to win an Irish National. Just from a training perspective, considering the amount of rivals you face in the race, and the achievement training wise of having a horse coming into the race with that prep, notwithstanding that he was 150-1, how much satisfaction does that give you? How would it compare to Vic's Canvas, obviously, who was third in the Aintree National for you as well?
Oh yeah, look, there's comparisons. Both horses, you know, it was great to have the both horses, but this fella now, he'd be similar. Vic's Canvas didn't need a whole lot of work. This fella doesn't need a whole lot of work. They're both tidy little jumpers. You know, we set out our stall after winning in Kilbeg in the Midlands National, and we just said, look, you know, we won't campaign him on winter ground. He doesn't enjoy it, so he's more spring summer horse. So Fixed Canvas was the same. He was just, I think he fell at the first of the year. He ran the Irish National. I think he was favoured for it. So he was unlucky, but like, came along then, he was second in the Whitbread Gold Cup, then obviously he was third in the English National. So like, it was great. There were two great horses to have, Johnny. It's just that sort of horse you need in the yard to keep you going.
What did you make with Tom Malone?
Yeah, I just thought it was absolutely magic. How are you, Dermot? Hope you're well.
Hope he's well. Down. If he's not well now, he'll never be well.
I'm very well. Yeah. Another bottom.
I know. We actually had, obviously, Dermot's from just down the road from Ferry House. I'm not living not too far from Ferry House at the moment as well. And I was laughing that Farrier came yesterday to trim up the pony's feet. And I was giggling. He said, oh, do you not back Freewheeling Dillon? And I was like, geez, it's a pity you didn't come last Wednesday, not this Wednesday. But it was absolutely brilliant. And you just think, like, the owner as well, she's in the Ward Union, and what the reaction just would have been like. I mean, Fairy House and Fairy House winners are just so synonymous with local glory, like Garrity's, Carberry's, you know, your dad winning the Drapers as well. And just what that reaction would have been like with someone from the Ward Union owning the horse and coming back into that enclosure. It would have been magic, Dermot.
That would have been unbelievable. But as I said, lads, like, we just have to motor on, and we're lucky racing is still going, I suppose, the way things are. But we missed all that. But like, Joanna was thrilled a bit. She watched it with her friends, and obviously she got a massive, massive buzz out of it. It's great for all the locals. It's great for racing. Sure, everyone's getting a buzz out of it. You know, my family, all our relations, everyone's getting a good kick out of it, so it's just great, you know.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dermot. We're just going to have to play the closing stages for you. You're just going to have to endure this yet again.
Beijing Sempo coming to the final fence, and it's still Freewheeling Dylan in the lead from Run Wild Fred on the near side over the last. Freewheeling Dylan, Run Wild Fred, Enjoy Darling, latest exhibition, running up to the finish. This is a crowning win for Ricky Doyle and Dermot McLaughlin as Freewheeling Dylan makes all in the Boys Sports Irish Grand National, beating Run Wild Fred, Enjoy Darling, latest.
The fact that on that, Dermot, just the fact that you see the finish of the race there and who was involved, obviously Kieran Murphy involved in the horse that was third, and yourself, and I suppose the wonderful thing about the Irish National is that it's not necessarily dominated by the bigger powers. Now, as much as Jig and Sound have, you know, been apt to throw in 11 or 12 runners in the race, it does give the likes of you a chance, and I think that's maybe why it is the people's race.
Oh, entirely, yeah. Tom Gibney was lucky enough to win it as well, so, like, you know, a small man has a chance. So obviously, if you prepare your horses right and think ahead, everyone has a chance.
How would you sum up Ricky Doyle's role in the race? Because it would have been horrible. The horse kind of, he wasn't entirely, I suppose he wasn't entirely fluent at the last and landed running, but just the composure of that lad throughout the race, and I know he commented subsequently, I think coming into the straight, he couldn't believe how well he was going, but it must have been a special moment between the two of you afterwards.
It was. Ricky's a great lad. He's a very cool customer. Even today, he won in, I mean, Kilbeggan there in July. He handed me the saddle. He says to me, is he in good form? I says he is. He said he'll take some baiting. Something similar to today. Very cool man. I came out. He said, if I can make it, I will. He says, if not, I'll just drop him in. But it'll take a fair one to get by me after the first, he says. So, okay, that fills with confidence as well, Johnny, you know. So it was great. Great lad. Sure, he jumped from fence to fence. He gets on very well with the horse, you know what I mean? So, the two of them work well, very well together.
Yeah, the aforementioned Paul Carr, we often spoke about the stickability that jockeys get from hunting, but there was no stickability to the couch anyway when it came to your cousin Ollie, and I think a lot of people may have seen and heard this already, but why not see and hear it for one more time?
Go on, Freewheeling Dylan! Go on! Please, for once in my fucking life! Come on! Please! Please! Come on, Freewheeling Dylan!
What sort of character is Ollie, Dermot?
He's very lively, Johnny, all right, yeah. Yeah. No, Ollie's dad, Peter, would have owed, I think he was second in the Irish National, he would have owed a lot of winners for the late Tom Draper. Peter would have as well, and Oliver's brother, Peter, young Peter McLaughlin, would have a good few winners in his time as well. He was with Noel Mead. So Ollie done a bit of pony racing and got a bit tall and gave up. Actually, he did a bit of hunting, but he's gone away from horses now, but... Yeah, sure, look, he rang me up there and I said to him, you're nearly as famous as the horse now, you know. So he just said his wife was minding a baby at the time, a 10-week-old baby for the neighbours. And when the race started, it was shh, shh, shh. But of course, when the ground toward last, the roaring started and the baby woke up anyway. And that was, he got a mouthful after the race. But sure, look, he didn't mind. He said it was great.
He let out a whelp like a kind of a dog that you just stood on by accident there as a second last.
I thought a golf ball was stuck in his throat or something. But, No, it was great for me. Sure, as I said, everyone got a great buzz out of it, and there's plenty of people ringing me, and you know, it's great for a lot of people. It's great for a lot of people.
Yeah, Tom, I suppose just the beauty of the Irish National, it's such a long race that if you back a horse like Freewheeling Dylan, or you're involved in a horse like that who's jumping from fence to fence out in front, almost gate to wire, it's like, you know, several minutes of excitement that builds up to the point that Ollie is kind of struggling to look at the screen at the third last. Then he goes back, he looks away again at the second last, and then he loses all the run of himself.
I know, we've all kind of been there, haven't we, Johnny, when you actually get a big price front runner and things are all going to plan for such a long period of the race. But it was an absolutely brilliant ride, it has to be said, by Ricky Doyle. The horse obviously jumped out a little bit keen, but he did seem to then settle things right away. And maybe after about three or four fences, my goodness, the horse just jumped out of his hands the whole way. And I think he said himself after the race, it was just a case of, you know, get to the third last, get to the second last. And I think he said he felt Jack Kennedy coming up towards him just in the at the back of the last. But he was full of confidence. And it probably translated to the horse throughout as well. But it must be a lovely feeling for a jockey as well, you know, just jump out in front like that and make all and not have anything come to you. And I think he said as well, he couldn't believe he was coming to the third last. He thought he had far much longer the race to go because he couldn't believe quite how well he was travelling.
Yeah, and I guess like we've all bemoaned the fact that there hasn't been a crowd, but can you just imagine if Freewheeling Dylan has come to the last and Ollie happens to be around the last, jumping around and kind of doing these circles like a madman? The horse could have been totally distracted. I think it probably worked in his favour. Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Just a bit of background, Dermot, you go way back in terms of racing, your dad and the Drapers, and that was the context of why this race was even more special to you.
Yeah, Johnny, as I said, I've been going there from a young age, and you know, I suppose my father rode a winner of it in 1962. I think he had three or four rides in it. My uncle Peter was second in it. You know, so it's a race, like, you know, I wanted to have some sort of history to follow us on with. So obviously I set out my stall there, and we did start training to hopefully come across a horse to be good enough to run into Irish National, let alone win one. So we're lucky we have a few staying chasers, and you know, that's able to compete at this level in these races, so it's great.
Can you trace some of your training methods back to the Drapers?
Oh, definitely. I was there I was there for 15 years, but I have to say now, when I was there, things were done really well, and I'd like to think I took plenty with me out, but you know what I mean? When my father was still alive, you know, what he was telling me, like what Tom Draper used to be doing with horses, and it was all slow work and fed well and looked after, and I think that progressed on to Jim, you know what I mean? And when I was there, the horses, I learned so much there, you know, how to look after horses and how to feed horses. And I think anyone that ever worked there will tell you the same. They were big, strong horses to ride, but if you could manage riding them horses, you could go anywhere. That's the way I was thinking anyway.
What's it like to train a staying chaser? You know, because the longevity of them obviously is subject, I guess, to their own mental and physical fortitude and just staying sound and staying sweet. But is it different to, I don't know, training your average 2 mile hurdler? Because like, that is a serious test. Like winning a Midlands National in Kilbeggan is actually a serious test of a horse. But to then produce it again in Irish National, and I imagine you have designs in this horse winning a bigger race down the line.
I have designs I'm going to Aintree next year, Johnny, hopefully. But no, it's, look, once they're healthy and looked after well enough, and we're lucky enough that we can let them out during the day here with plenty of land. So like, they're not that they're kept sweet, but like, you wouldn't be over when they're fit and they're healthy. So you know, we were just a matter of keeping them ticking over and keeping the sweets and doing a few different things with them every now and again. But no, like as I said, once they're healthy, keep sound is the main thing, isn't it?
And Tom, you know, these are the types of horses that the public get an affinity towards as well.
Yeah, there's something really special about staying chasers, aren't there? And I do think that is the kind of horse that people as well, you know, they tend to be around for quite a long time. They win races that are on the telly, the likes of the Irish Grand National, the Aintree Grand National, Gold Cup, or you know, whatever. But when you have horses that, you know, they'll be produced when they're maybe they'll win a point to point when they're four or five, you might see them then out as a novice chaser when they're seven, but you'd hope to see them, you know, on 8, 9, 10, 11 when they go and win big races. So they're around for a long time, and it's like I said, they're just horses that the public do get behind. And I suppose, you know, you think of like the ultimate staying chase, you think of someone like Denman, who's just gets out in front and bowled along and just to carry that weight, a big, like you say, a kind of horse that the Drapers would have had, a big lump of a staying chaser. And they really are the kind of horses that the public, like you say, do get behind, aren't they?
You won a nice amount of money, obviously, as the trainer of the winner of the National Derby. But just to, in context, what are your ambitions? Because it's strange, you know, people almost jump to conclusions that you win a race like this, it changes your career. You mightn't get another horse out of it. It doesn't work like that. What are your ambitions out of it?
No, well, Johnny, obviously to progress. You know, we've always a full house of stables there. We've 40 horses, 40 stables. So, would you like to think a better class of horses might come? You know what I mean? But the current climate isn't, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, what's around the corner. But No, we just keep going at what we have. We've some very nice horses. We're very lucky to have Lee Valley Gallops just down the road from us, this top class facility as well. So, you know, we now have to walk down the road. We need all these, the modern day horses to be trained, you know, to the top level, you know. So everything has to be done 100% right. So hopefully we can compete now at the next level as well again. You know what I mean? That's what I'd be hoping for anyway.
Because your strike rate has developed into around 11 or 12%, which is no mean feat. It's a seriously, seriously competitive environment that you're in.
Definitely, definitely, Johnny. And it's only probably going to get harder and harder as well. You know what I mean? Obviously, the results in Cheltenham stand out for that, you know. And every day, like, you know, you're going out there competing at a very, very high level. So, as I said before, everything has to be 100% right before you go racing nowadays, because, you know, you won't be at the races full stop.
And just, Tom, in terms of what I was kind of alluding to at the start of the show, this was a victory, I think, that it carried on that groundswell of good feeling that racing enjoyed from Cheltenham in Ireland into Fairy House, because it was racing back on the front pages for the right reasons. The Dillon reference was obviously, good for the publicity as well. Ricky Doyle, Darren McLaughlin, not exactly household names for your average sports kind of fan. So I thought it ticked nearly every box. And I even spoke to one bookmaker representative who said that they lost on the race because some people did like the fact that it was a Dillon a reference, and it was 150-1.
Yeah, I know. And Dillon is a real popular name amongst with kids as well. So you'd imagine there's lots of grannies around the place with grandsons called Dillon who they're having their pound each way on for as well. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all, because I saw Kevin McManus bookmakers, and he was tweeting, "Oh, can't wait to be back next year. Oh, 150-1 winner of the National." And I was kind of thinking, first of all, if the bookies had been there this year, there's no way he would have been 150-1, just because there would have been quite a lot of those fivers and tenors each way just for the name, and then obviously the local connection as well. But the win, you're dead right, did tick so many brilliant boxes. Just like I say, a local winner is great. And then just from horse racing's point of view, obviously a negative that gets portrayed at horse racing would be that it's elitist and that, you know, only the Jake McManuses and Jiggenstones of this world are competitive. But like you said, just the way it's transferred on from Cheltenham and now to the Irish Grand National, you know, smaller stables going and winning. Then you saw at Aintree this afternoon, Belfast Banter goes and takes a grade one. And that's, you know, another first grade one for Kevin Sexton and Peter Fahey as well. So it really goes to show, as Kevin, I think it was Kevin Blake said in ITV, I mean, you come to Ireland for horsemen, like we're the All Blacks of horsemen, you know, and that just fits it well. And like it stands to reason that people that travel the world, Irish people travel the world to be brilliant horsemen. So it stands to reason that in Ireland, the best horses and horsemen stay here and ply their trade.
What did you make of Cheltenham, actually, Dermot, in terms of the Irish domination? It wasn't, I suppose, unexpected that Ireland would dominate, but just the actual extent of it was quite staggering, I thought.
Unbelievable, Johnny, but like, I suppose, like, the Irish horses staying here now, and we're lucky enough to have the owners to keep them in this country. And you know, as Tom alluded to there, like, we're probably renowned all over the world for producing the best jockeys and horses on the day. So, like, you know, jockeys, you know, all over England and Ireland, so most of the jockeys that ride in England are Irish lads. So, like, you know, it's great. It's great. It's unbelievable, like, the way Cheltenham turned out.
But do you see that trend changing in terms of big owners? Obviously, Michael O'Leary's kind of easing his involvement in the game. You still have JP McManus, but you don't really have the, I suppose, the Potts involvement that we had from before. Cheveley Park is lessening its involvement. Mm-hmm. Is it going to get more egalitarian in terms of owners? Which I guess for the likes of you and for jumps racing in general mightn't be a bad thing anyway.
It's hard to know, Johnny, but like, there's so many people out there like want to get involved in racing, which is great, let it be syndicates or, you know, whatever, like, you know what I mean? So, like, once there's a demand for the horse, hopefully it'll be staying in Ireland.
How many owners would you have?
We've 40 horses, so we've probably about 20, 25 different owners, you know what I mean?
So how do you, I guess it's all gone WhatsApp now, where it's nearly the easiest way to communicate or whatever. How do you deal with the various owners, and how much of that does that take off of your kind of your daily life?
It takes up a lot of time, Johnny, now, because obviously with COVID, they can't come to the yard. We used to be open house there. I'd rather to come and have a chat with them, see the horses in the gallop. It's a lot easier for me to relate to them when they see their own horse than trying to make a phone call to them, obviously, you know. But yeah, we have to WhatsApp. We have to keep them up to date on what's going on. And it's a bit difficult at the moment there because entries are so high and ballots, you know what I mean? Like, you can't really know when your horse is in handicap is going to get a run nowadays, you know what I mean? And we have Maiden Hurdle, I think just 90, 95 horses. Some of the tracks only take 15. So, like, you could be ringing and knowing on a Monday saying your horse has entered for Friday, but you mightn't get a run for two more weeks. So that's a bit frustrating at the moment, but that's what we have to deal with. But and most owners now, in fairness, you know, sure, they're up to date and they can see the entries themselves. And like, you know, as I said, like, we're a very open house in our yard, you know, we like them calling in, seeing the horse and the gallops. And, but obviously communication now is essential. So I spend a lot of the evening on the phone, all right, yeah.
Can I ask you, when Vic's Canvas finished third, Gary O'Brien obviously notably involved in that horse, when Vic's Canvas finished third in the entry national, as he crossed the line, how would you sum up your feeling?
I was unbelievable. My wife was there and at the side of the day, my brother was there, Ollie was there as well. I forgot Ollie was there. So it was a good roar match. When he made a mistake, I only realised how bad a mistake it was that even. You know what I mean? I heard he actually came to comment here, said he was gone down, but obviously until I seen it later, how, you know, he was sliding on his belly. I think it was Barry Gert, he said to me that evening or the next day, sure, like he was best 14 lengths and he lost about 25. So I suppose if he did the maths, but who's to say something else might have happened later on in the race? But no, he was 13-year-old going over there. As I said, he fell the first in the Irish National. He was well fancied that year, and then he went to Sandown, Ruby Road, and actually was second. So, great little horse for me to start off with. You know what I mean? He had his complications and that, but we knew how to deal with him, and great little horse. And a tough, very tough little horse. Very tough.
I guess you strike me as somebody who's just well able, or pretty well able, to deal with the highs and lows, because there are obviously more of the latter.
Unbelievable. That's what I say to people there. You know, I know jockeys have ups and downs, but it's like everything else. If you have a horse right and he lets you down or something goes wrong, you're very disappointed. But then you have days like the other day, like I leave in Fairhouse, the only thing that was in my favour, leaving to go to Fairhouse, I said to the lads, at least the ground will suit these horses. The other horse is well fancied, but never really got into the race. Conor said he was on the back foot from halfway. The pace of the race, he just, being a novice, he got a bit crowded, I think, and missed a few and along the way. So, like, that was disappointing, but obviously there's ups and downs the same day, you know what I mean? We won the first race in Cork, 4-6 on shot as well that day. So, like, I was positive going racing, but as I said, like, there's so many things can go wrong. So many things that's out of your control. It's unbelievable, you know? But you have to be able to take the highs and the lows.
And, Dermot, just how important was Vic's Canvas? Sorry, just on Vic's Canvas there. Like, how important was he for you, just kind of relatively at the start of your training career, just to really put you on the map? Because, like you said, there's so many talented trainers. And just to get a horse to just compete in those bigger levels, just for visibility, if nothing else.
That was unbelievable, Tom. Like, you know, as I said, anyone starting out, let it be a jockey or a trainer, needs a horse to be able to get you where you need to be. And he was a tough little horse, that fella. We minded him well. Obviously, he was a stable star, so he got everything that was going. But he was great. It's unfortunate. Like, he won the Cork National, fair enough. But just I always thought it was one of them big, big races in a national, an Irish national. And then obviously he made that mistake in Aintree that day, and probably was, you know, he still led over the last. That's to show you how tough he was. You know, he was only done over in the run in. But even Robbie Dunn came in that day, and you know, he was down, and he said to me, "Jesus, like, you know." To get up off the ground, and he kept going again. He said, "It's unbelievable, you know, at 13 years of age." So when he was 100-1 that day as well, you know. So I still have the poster up in the yard. It's up in the wall there. But you need them. You need them starting out. Everyone needs, you know, they need the like of that horse. So a jockey the same, a young jockey starting out, just to know you're doing things right and give you a bit of confidence, you know, going forward.
You're obviously training. My mother says this day 12 months and all that, but you're obviously training from tomorrow 12 months in terms of Vic's Canvas for next year, or not Vic's Canvas, rather Freewheeling Dillon for next year. It's all about entry, I guess.
Yeah, plenty of people have said that to me, but on the way up, like, you know, then again, as I said, so much can go wrong, but look, if he gets top of the ground, he'll jump. Obviously, he's a very good little jumper. He's a lot of comparisons to Vic's Canvas. He's only about 16-1, so he wouldn't carry Vic's Canvas once he gave over 11 stone. You know, we were always in trouble. He was lucky enough when he won the good races, he was about 10-10, 10-8. So we'll just see. But as I said to Sheila there the other day, like, that's what the aim will be next year. You know what I mean? Hopefully, if we can keep him right and sound, but we don't have to run him too many often anyway. So, like, you know, that's the plus factor. You know what I mean? I'd say, I think he's 145 now. So, you know, the English handicapper probably put a few pounds on him, obviously. And we could sneak in the bottom there, but, you know, as I said, hopefully we'll get there next year. That's the plan anyway.
I guess you had a moment of reflection maybe Monday evening and thought what your dad would have made of it all, and were he looking down on you?
Yeah, as all people said, I was very cool, but, you know, there was a lot going through my head straight after the win, after the horse went past the line, and all these things come into your own head, and your father, and like, my father was only passed away week, and I had my first runner and won. And lucky enough, I won Ross Collins for the first half we ran one. So like, you'd be, all these things go through your mind, through your head, as I said. But like, it was great. It's the only thing, that my family wasn't there, and it would have been very nice now. And obviously being from Rathote, and well, I mean, live between Rathote and Corahai, it would have been a lot of local people there as well. So but like, that's the way it is nowadays, so you know, that's what we have to deal with.
And just imagine the look on the priest in the near future as he's christening a young child in the area, and somehow the horse, or the young child, is called Freewheeling, not only Dylan, but Freewheeling, and wondering what to make of it all. Congratulations, and I hope you enjoy the weekend, and hopefully we're back talking about the horse this time 12 months.
Really appreciate it, lads, and thanks very much.
Thanks a million, Nervous.
Cheers, Dermot.
Yeah, Tom, it's just a good story.
It's a really, really good story. And you know what? Next year, no matter, even if Freewill and Dylan does get that kind of, you know, extra penalty for an Irish handicapper or whatever, the English Grand National, the Ancient Grand National, is such a classy race, and you'll have, you know, something, not probably Bristol Demai, but something like Bristol Demai up there around the mid-160s that will ensure that even if, you know, Freewill and Dylan does get a lump of weight, that he still be down sub 11 stone, because as Dermot said, he isn't the biggest horse in the world, but it does seem like the key factors to him do seem to be to get, you know, a little bit of time at the front, a little bit of daylight, and just pop away on good ground. And you know, when horses can just find their rhythm and be left alone and be, you know, allowed to figure things out for themselves, it's kind of amazing what they can do. And they're almost, not say they're unhandicapable, but you know, if they're ideal conditions are reached, then they can certainly surpass maybe what people expect.
Unhandicapable. I kind of know what you mean, and it brings me on to Tiger Roll, because like, you're just watching him beating 80 or 90 lengths yesterday in a race he should never be running in. Why is he not running in the National tomorrow?
Yeah, it's difficult. I suppose I feel like at times on Off the Wall I'm the unofficial Tiger Roll correspondent, because I've spoken on AM about him a few times, and you know, he is the biggest equine name in racing. I mean, he's won 2 Grand Nationals. It is still by far the biggest race of the year, and he's a dual winner of it. And judged on what we saw at Cheltenham, he's probably maybe £3 too high in the handicap, but what can you do? Like, he's gone and won it cross country by that. Like the handicapper can't say, oh no, actually, I think he's probably only 160 horse. Like, you can't say that. Yes, he is never going to compete in a Gold Cup. He is not genuinely a sort of mid-160s horse, but he is a Grand National and cross-country specialist, and as difficult as it is to assess what his numerical ability is as gives it a handicap mark, I mean, you can't go and say he's deserving any less than sort of £7 for, you know, winning the National 2 years ago when he was effectively a couple of pounds well in for his, you know, for his cross-country success.
Tiger Roll don't win the race, but what does?
I don't know. Well, obviously you got Cloth Cap.
Trevor Hemmings going for 4 wins in the race, which is, I know he's well into the seasoned owner stage. This is, it would be a hell of an achievement.
It's absolutely incredible, and it'd be a great story. And look, he's a very, very likeable horse, and so theoretically he's a stone well in. The horse I backed for the race personally is Annabelle Fly. Absolutely love him. Backed him for the race last year. Maybe the ground might be just a shade quick, but I mean, the good thing you know about the National these days is it's never going to get proper good, like Mr. Frisk fast type ground. You know, they've been watering the guts out of the place for the last 2 weeks, so I think there's a little bit of rain forecast over the next sort of 24 hours, very little, but my class angle is to go with Annabelle Fly, because you know, he's placed in the race twice. He was 33s during the week. He's about 25-1 now, and again, like, you know, for you once a year punters, just have a look, you'll get 6-7 places, you know. Obviously, the dream for this weekend is the Grand National Masters double, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, it's like, I can see your angle with Annabelle Fly. If he's back tomorrow, I think it'll be very interesting, because JP is 7 in the race. One of them of the septet is certain to be backed. I like any second now of the septet. Not certain he'll get home, but I usually don't like horses with stamina doubts. But I opposed him in the Kim Muir 2 years ago, thinking he wouldn't get home, and just thought he was brilliant in his prep run, to be honest. Just to mention, as the toe tend to follow gallops to a finale, Jer has once again regained the upper hand in the toe tend to follow. He went into entry with a 44-point deficit, but Abcadabras proved another bonus point winner, landing the entry hurdle and 57.7 points. So it all comes down to Paisley Park running for yours truly in the Stairs Hurdle Saturday. I'll still be fairly confident to go to win this. But
I feel like I feel like, do you remember Punchestown a few years ago, and they had those like birdie paintings with like Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott, so the heavyweight clash going into Punchestown. That's what it's going to be like for you guys going into the end of your 10 tomorrow.
Yeah, Ger and I would be a heavyweight clash of a different kind, I think. We've had a long lockdown at this stage. We need to be let out, but Ger is on 491.18. I'm on 477.88. Visit tote.e for the tote versus SP price guarantee on this Saturday's Aintree Grand National. Tom, enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, I will do, John. You too.
Yeah, that was Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every horse racing moment and visit hri.ie.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball,
brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go Facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.